Hi guys, this is Blood Brothers Act 2. It's Miss Strachan and Miss Lowry again, and we're going to talk a little bit about the characters, the plots, the events in Act 2.
Brilliant. So, Act 2 starts with the recurring motive of the singing about Marilyn Monroe, which is the same as Act 1. So, Marilyn Monroe being this tragic figure of the time, or actually just beforehand, and Mrs. Johnston compares herself quite often to Marilyn Monroe, or says that her husband compared her to Marilyn Monroe. So a quote from the beginning of Act 2 says, "I've got legs like Marilyn Monroe," so a simile there. And Marilyn Monroe, obviously a very glamorous figure from Hollywood, whose life was cut short when she died, and a bit of a mystery as to how she died. So, sort of foreshadowing the tragedy, not that Mrs. Johnston's going to die, but that there is death and pain.
And it could be, you're right, it could be symbolic, the fact that they've used Marilyn Monroe to represent Mrs. Johnston. It could be symbolic of the tragic life that she is leading, because she's not been able to bring up her twins as twins, and B, she then sees them die at the end of the play, both of her children. So, you know, her life story is quite tragic and quite sad. So it could be, you know, the death of hope for Mrs. Johnston, because she could hope that one day she will get to see her lost son, but when she does, obviously they die. So it is quite sad.
Indeed, yeah. So another quote actually that I think is quite interesting is that she says, "And for that other child of mine that I haven't seen for years, each day I'll pray he'll be okay, not like Marilyn Monroe." So we get this first a little hint that although we know that both of the twins are going to die, we realise that Mrs. Johnston is really now realising that it's not going to be okay, and life isn't going to be fine and dandy, just like Marilyn Monroe's life wasn't. Moving on from that, Act 2 is begins when the twins are teenagers. So I can't remember if we said this in the last one, but Mrs. Johnston has managed to get onto a housing scheme.
She's moved to the same area as Edward and Mickey, and we see the twins re-meet, and they start to, restart their friendship, and they start to hang around together. Edward and Mickey both go to school in separate schools. Edward goes to quite a posh school, whereas Mickey goes to a more common school.
So we kind of get the idea this was the time of grammar schools. So
Edward would have went to the grammar school because he was from a well-to-do family with lots of money, whereas Mickey would have went to the secondary modern, which was the school that you went to if you weren't considered to have very many prospects in terms of academic capabilities. So again, you've seen the unfairness in the way that they're treated, because actually they are from the same family. It's just that their upbringing has been very, very different to each other's. And Mickey is looked down upon by society, whereas Edward is not. And he has much more opportunities and life chances. And we see that later with the university as well.
And I think this is what starts to drive them apart, really, isn't it? Because Mickey starts to realise that actually he's not getting the same chances that Eddie or Edward is having. And so as the play goes on, Eddie's in a position of power, being working for the sort of local council, whereas Mickey ends up
a labourer. Then in prison.
In prison, yeah.
So that brings us to Sammy, his brother. Sammy is a bit of a wrong one, really. He has a gun. He is kind of off the rails, if you like, and not very morally good. He runs off and hides the gun under the floorboards of Mickey and Mrs. Johnson's house. And in the meantime, Mickey has actually married Linda, mm-hmm. because she got pregnant before they were married. And actually, they're both very, very young. Edward's gone off to university. Edward wants to speak to Mickey, but Mickey doesn't want to speak to him, mm-hmm. because he's quite angry about the way that he's been treated. And then that's when Mickey goes into prison. Because when Sammy runs away, it's Mickey that's left holding responsibility for the robbery that went wrong. Mm. But actually it was Sammy's fault, and that leads to Mickey falling into quite a deep depression while he's in prison.
He really feels the injustice, doesn't he?
Yeah.
And so we have quotes from Sammy such as, "Come on, Mickey." So you really get the impression that Sammy is sort of twisting Mickey's arm to be a part of the robbery.
And Mickey,
these kinds of things.
Mickey only agrees, it's New Year's Eve, he only agrees because he has no money and no prospects. He's lost his job, he's unemployed, there isn't any work out there for him. He hasn't got an education because he was expelled from school. So you can see that downward spiral starts when he leaves school without an education. Mm-hmm. So his entire existence and his self-worth is already at rock bottom. Mm-hmm. Then he has a job and he's managing to provide for his family, Linda. But they're still living with Mrs. Johnson at that point. Mm-hmm. So they don't even have a house of their own, which is quite sad, really, because you wouldn't expect to be married and with a pregnant wife and not have a place of your own. But obviously, that is just the reality for them. So when Sammy comes up with a plan to do the robbery, Mickey thinks that nothing can go wrong.
Mm, and that nothing could be worse.
Yeah, and that things are bad enough as it is. And little does he know that actually it's going to result in him going to prison and then becoming addicted to medicine that he's taking for depression. But when he comes out of prison, he feels like he can't get off the medication, and his relationship with Linda suffers as a result, because Mickey doesn't want to do anything. He doesn't want to go anywhere. He doesn't want to speak to Edward. He doesn't want to speak to Linda. He just seems to go into himself.
I mean, Linda is very supportive of Mickey, or very affectionate towards him. So she says things like, "Take no notice, Mickey. I love you." And another quote, "I don't care who knows, I just love you, I love you." So Linda's very affectionate towards Mickey and trying to sort of bolster him up a bit, but Mickey's own self-worth is so low that actually it doesn't matter what Linda says to him at this point. He doesn't feel worthy, and it's sort of a bit of a self-fulfilling prophecy after that.
Yeah, exactly, because Linda then feels rejected by Mickey because he's constantly not interested in her or what she's doing, or the fact that she has got small children to look after and no other outlet. So, and that she's looked after them on her own while he's been in prison.
Exactly.
And that brings us to the end, really, when Mickey sees Linda and Edward together, and he puts two and two together and makes an assumption that they are actually having an affair. There is a kiss, mm-hmm. but it's really ambiguous as to whether they are actually engaging in an extramarital affair. Mm.
Well, I get the impression that Linda went to Edward to ask for help. About Mickey, help with Mickey, because Mickey can't get a job, and because Edward is in this position of power where he works for the council, Linda thinks that Edward might be able to pull some strings to get Mickey a job. But obviously that's only going to anger Mickey more, because he feels as though, he doesn't want to be sort of given a handout by Edward, even though he so desperately needs it. You know, his pride gets in the way.
Yeah.
And Linda, perhaps at the time, doesn't feel secure in the relationship, and Edward, who she knows has been very fond of her in the past, is a very secure character who could look after her, perhaps more than Mickey is doing so.
And Edward is a counsellor, so he's actually working to benefit other people. So he can really help Mickey, but Mickey chooses not to take that help. He feels like when Linda suggests it, he feels like he's being looked down on, and that taking any help from Edward is a sign that he has no pride,
mm-hmm.
and that he can't manage on his own, and that really is one of the key, you know, turning points at the end of the play. The fact that Mickey feels so worthless. He even says, you know, when in the scene where he shoots Edward and then the police shoot Mickey, Mickey actually says, "I could have had his life."
Mm.
So he's realizing that, you know, it is really unfair.
Mm.
They only find out that they are actually brothers when Mrs. Johnson shouts, you know, "Don't do it, he's your brother."
Yeah, so she's thinking that it will make the situation better, but actually it makes it 100 times worse. Because they have become so different despite starting off in the same womb, even the way they talk.
The way they dress, the jobs that they have, the just the
their
education
lives
that they've had. Mm. Edward went off to university. And, you know, the narrator sings towards the end, "Yes, the devil's still got your number." And that's a repetition of the song from earlier, "The devil's got your number," which suggests that this was all... the ending was foretold. It was foreshadowed right from the start. The devil knew about the pact that Mrs. Johnson made with Mrs. Lyons to give up one of her babies, and it was never going to end well. And we see that with the two characters at the end lying dead. And right at the last line of an old movie with Marilyn Monroe, we've got that's quite poignant in the fact that Marilyn Monroe, you know, her story has been retold and retold and retold, and the story of Mickey and Eddie is obviously retold.
And it can't be changed.
And Marilyn Monroe's story couldn't be changed. So again, that recurring motif, ending with that, is quite interesting because it suggests that this was a story that was going to happen and it was inevitable.
So I suppose to sum up, really, it's the story of, well, it's a story of class differences.
Wealth and poverty.
Yes, wealth and poverty. Poverty, fate, and I suppose, you know, believing something can happen can end up making it so sort of a self-fulfilling prophecy kind of theme going on. So Mrs. Johnston believing in fate so much and being so superstitious sort of led to the death of her children.
Yeah, so I think that's, you know, that sums up Blood Brothers really nicely. Thank you.